The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Hello, welcome to a brand new best podcast in baseball. I'm joined this week by sports columnist Jeff Gordon, and we are going to discuss this premise. If the Cardinals are playing this well in May, and their entire goal is to improve month by month, have they raised the bar for what should be expected of them in June? And have they raised the bar on what should be expected of them at all? Is this team, Jeff, a contender? Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Eric Gould, joined this week by our instant offense, our tip sheet guru, our man of many opinions and many different roles at the Post-Dispatch. It is, of course, Jeff Gordon. You know him from Inside Pitch and also his recurring appearances here on the best podcast in baseball. Jeff, how's St. Louis?
Well, it's looking, I think people have got to feel pretty good about this team. I'm eager to see if when this team finally makes it back home, we start seeing a few more fans at the ballpark.
Yeah, you know, that it's an interesting thing. Like, right, okay, so I'm in Philadelphia. The Cardinals just wrapped up a series there against the Phillies. They split a doubleheader to win the series. Their 9-game winning streak ends, but they've won 10 out of 11 and now head to Kansas City, where the Royals have the second best home record in the American League. So it's not like they're going in there to a team that isn't ready for them and isn't playing well. The Royals did scratch one of their best pitchers, so we'll see what that means for their series. I'm really eager to see exactly what you're talking about, the reception of the Cardinals. Have they, through this winning streak, have they recalibrated what fans should expect from them? Maybe even like what they should expect from themselves?
Yeah, I think what I like about this team is the way they're playing. You know, I mean, there's going to be some guys that are going to go through tough stretches. Some guys already are. But I look at a team now that plays the game with, aggression on the bases. Yeah. You're seeing real plus plays in the field. Mm-hmm. Jordan Walker struggles as an outfielder previously. He makes a plus play to end the ball game. Victor Scott had a little bit of hesitation on a play, and he cleaned it up. He's made plays. You know, you're seeing – outstanding play in the field. You're seeing just good baseball, the team that's playing aggressively. And I think that's one thing we've talked about earlier is that style of, you know, there's an energy, there's a pace to this team. The young guys leading the way with that, a guy like Victor Scott II leading the way with the way he just goes about his business, the way Wynn does. Now I think they're becoming the co-faces of the franchise. And I think that's important because it's, you know, they're winning some games, but they're showing that, okay, there's a direction. And there's an attitude with this group, and they're having fun. They're playing well. I think it's a team you can get behind. I mean, there's going to be tough stretches ahead, but I think you definitely have changed expectations.
An entertaining team, got some charisma. It does have the feel in the past 2 weeks here, even longer, really. They haven't lost a series in 3 weeks. It does have this feel of kind of a snowball rolling downhill. Like, you know, there for a while, you go back to the series on the road against the Mets, right? The Mets sweep them. But the Cardinals were in those games, and they were encouraged by the way they were playing. But they very much look like a team, you know, trying to learn how to win and trying to learn how to connect the style of play that they had and the talents they had to a way that would win and against an inferior team, you know, not the Mets, who are really good. They would have won some of those games, but they just were out-talented. That's just what a really contending team looks like. And rather than like go, okay, well, now we have to change or we have to wonder, will this style ever win? The Cardinals just kind of plowed on. And once the bullpen kind of clicked into gear, right, you got Gordon Crisafo and some of those roles and what Steven Matz did to free up the rotation. Once those kind of Lego pieces snapped tighter, then they won 9 in a row. And I think it's a really interesting dilemma. I don't know if it's a dilemma, but it's a really interesting question for these Cardinals is, all right, if you're capable of playing this well, and you're not going to win 9 in a row all the time, but if you're capable of playing this well and you've shown you can consistently do it now for almost a month, certainly every home game they've been in, know, isn't this what should be expected of them? Is it like maybe this transition year is starting to look a whole lot like any other year and what expectations should be?
Well, you look at several of the guys just as individuals, you know. Sure. You saw what Eric Fetty did earlier last year in Chicago with a bad team, and then he simply ran out of gas for the Cardinals. You look at what Sonny Gray can do, and yeah, he had a rough outing in Philly, but he battled through, and you know what kind of competitor he is. You know what the good Miles Michaelis is, and if you handle him correctly and that third time through the order, you're ready to go and get him out. You know, you look at who Matthew Liberatore has become. You know, I think he's a different pitcher now. I think he should expect more. It's been a long run for him to get to this point, but I think you can expect more. You know, I think that's fair. And, you know, I think you know what you have with Pallante now. He's established. There'll be some rough day games in there, but he's competing. And you know, and you've got other pieces. You know who Helsley is. You know, JoJo established himself in the bullpen, and now he's back to being where he was. You just go down the list. So, yeah, I think some of the questions we had earlier about this team, we need to know that – we need to acknowledge that a lot of these guys are capable and have done this before. And so it's not like a bunch of guys are doing things that, boy, we couldn't have ever imagined.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. There isn't that performance within this stretch that you go, oh, yeah, that's way out of the ordinary. I wrote a little bit about this in Washington, Jeff, and I was reminded while watching that series of talking to scouts and some of the stories I hear about them looking at amateur players, right? Like they'll go out and they'll go to a college or they'll go to a high school, and there might be a time where they're there and all of a sudden they see a player who just has the game of his life, right? Or like a pitcher who they got, you know, down as a 92, 93, all of a sudden now, you know, he puts the right things together, the right adrenaline together, and he's a 98 in this game. And then they go back and see him the next time and he's back to that 91, 92. And the idea is, okay, well, it's in there. Like that, if he's able to do it and you saw him do it once, then it's in there. And it's up to the scout to say, okay, well, it's something that can be developed and then harnessed and all that, but it's in there. It happened once. So it's in there somewhere. And how do you bring it out? I think a lot of that kind of describes the Cardinals. When you watch them over this past 11 game stretch and you see the very many varied multifaceted ways they've won, you go, oh, well it's in there. So it's in there. So if it's in there, then shouldn't it always be out there to drive this team and make us rethink what they're capable of in the division?
Yeah, I think so. And I think with the you combine what they're all capable of with now the collective vibe that you've written about, where the group has a group attitude that, you know, we can do this. You know, a great example being of the collective being, you know, in Philly, you're there. They lose a well-played game, but 2-1 is very frustrating.
Yeah, blooper and an infield single.
Yeah, it's baseball. It stakes. Yeah. Then you immediately fall behind with your ace on the mound, and that would have been the time to think, okay, let's start getting my stuff together for the flight home. They came back. They overcame that poor start. Now, I do hope, Eric, I hope to God that nobody tried to win that contest or collect that $1,000 for those cheese steaks. I hope nobody did that. It would not have been a happy flight for that cat, whoever that was. If somebody did that, not a happy flight home. But the team in that game, instead of sagging, which, you know, teams do in the 162-game grind, they just kept taking every punch and responding as a group. And so I think, yeah, with the group vibe being what it is, I think that supports the individuals as they try to get through the downturns and the slumps and the struggles. I think if the group is feeling good and one or two guys aren't, those guys can ride through that because the group's doing well and they can get to the other side. They don't feel like they're dragging everything down. Right. So I think there's a real value in the collective vibe they have, and I think that's going to uplift some of the guys and through some of the ups and downs and provide a little more consistency with the group. Because, you know, you've watched a million baseball games and you've been around a million games where in the clubhouse before and after, the vibe is so important for guys to feed from. Because if it's bad, then everybody's worse than they are. If the vibe is good, everybody's better than they, or maybe not, but maybe everybody's their better version of themselves.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Missouri baseball fans, turn your takes into a little cash with Underdog, a fan-favorite sports app where you can make picks to win money. Playing on Underdog is as easy as selecting higher or lower on players' stats like home runs, hits, strikeouts, and more. If you get them all right, you could win big cash prizes. Join the over 7 million fans on Underdog by downloading the app, signing up, and depositing today using promo code POST to get $50 when you make your first $5 entry, win or lose.
The way Nolan Arenado has described that is he said, you know, he talked about how they're having fun coming to the ballpark, and the differentiation that he made is that you're coming to the ballpark believing that you're going to find ways to win, not coming to the ballpark hoping that happens. And I know that's like a subtle thing, but he's talked on this topic before. And even when the Cardinals had a winning record last year, and certainly when they had the losing season in 2023, you know, he would describe how, like, you come to the ballpark and it's like, what's going to go wrong, or what, you know, how much has to go right to win, these two things. And he said, now it's like you come in and there's like this enthusiasm that they're going to solve the puzzle in a different way today. You know, that they just they're going to go out and they're going to find a way to win. And it may not be the way they won on Tuesday. It may not be the way they won on Saturday, but it's going to be the way they have to win on Wednesday. And there's an excitement there that is also creating. And we both know this, and we talk about it, you know, winning creates it's the chemical agent, right, for strong chemistry. It's the bonding agent. It's what matters. And I think what you talked about there with the young players who are struggling, we've seen it with Alec Burleson, right? Alec Burleson went, you know, first month of the season searching, you know, didn't have any barrels, didn't have any home runs. But there was like this feeling around him and supported from the coaches and the peers, you know, of a man, you know, you're here, be part of this, like, keep going. And there was I don't want to say there was a patience there, but there was a support system that you're going to produce and it's going to happen eventually. And without the weight that they've alleviated from every day they have to win, and that impatience that has dominated the Cardinals for a while, it kind of created a helium that lifted him up. And I'm really eager to see, Jeff, if that same kind of thing can happen with Jordan Walker. Walker struggled at the plate. But can his play in the outfield, can Brant Brown's relentless enthusiasm and excitement and support of him in the batting cage, can teammates, you know, can they play a role in this that create kind of a buoyancy for him that makes him just be more confident, more comfortable, less at times he looks agitated at the plate. And, you know, can something around him in this, as you described it, the vibe that they have going now, move on from how the way it helped Alec Burleson to the way it helped Jordan Walker?
Well, you hope so. You hope that when he makes a play in the field that could end a game, and the play he wouldn't have made a year ago, that's a huge thing. And in a game when nothing else happened, he can drive in a run, and games when everybody else is hitting, you know, he's had situations where he's drawn a couple walks. And, you know, he's contributed in some way in this process. It's all these guys are so different, but if the team has this overarching, you know, drive to it, which is something I always, you know, was pressing from day one, go back to spring training, all the things you guys have been writing, you know, how he wants this team to go. And mm-hmm. There's a couple of uncertain guys still. Nolan Gorman's kind of an uncertain individual at times, you know, very kind of reflecting on things and why is this not working and trying to keep his head in the right place. Yeah, you would hope so. But, you know, part of the challenge going forward is going to be, you know, there's no such doubt with Ivan Herrera, and he's going to have at-bats. Now Alec Burleson's really feeling it. He's going to need at-bats. You got guys that want to play every day and produce every day. It's going to be tough. That runway, you know, you want to see him do well, and the team wants him to do well, but as the expectations for the team evolve and change for the better, you know, now you're going to be I think to flip this thing around, is Ollie going to manage differently?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And I asked him about, that specific thing actually in Washington is this notion that he's been pretty resolute, as we've mentioned, and I've quoted him, and it's going to be an ongoing theme of this season, is that they wanted the team to be better in May than April, better in June than May. Like, okay, if they're playing this well in May, does that increase what better mean, how they define better in June? He took it towards an individual, and he made the point, like, without using names, but he was like, all right, look, there are clear things going into this season as we look at it as a development season that we want to see. And as a staff, we have to make sure that each player's on that improving train. And he said, even like the guys, even the mentality of coming into the ballpark each day is about how do you get better today? And that's actually like the conversation. Okay, here are the things that you can improve. And he makes a point about like, all right, here's how an opponent is attacking you. Do you have an answer for that? Victor Scott is a great example. First, you know, he played very well out of spring, won the starting center field job, comes in doing very well. Well, you can imagine what happens next. Opponent starts spinning him, lots and lots of spin. Goodbye fastballs, hello breaking balls. What are you going to do with it? And in May, Victor now has a way to combat that. You know, he had a single to left field. This is against the Phillies. That's what he's doing. Like, he has found a way to say, all right, you're going to pitch me there. I can handle that. I can get a base hit out of that. I can still cause havoc because I know what to do. I have an answer. I have adjusted. I know what the opponent has doing, and I've improved. And Marmol said, like, he kind of said, do you have each of these guys kind of on an individual track of like, all right, what are they doing to improve the way opponents are attacking him? And he said, if all of that comes together, then collectively they'll be a good team. Collectively they'll win because they're closing the holes in their game and they're closing their vulnerabilities that opponents will try to take advantage of. But it's not a notion of judging if the team is getting better. It's about, are the individuals getting better?
Yeah, that being a mandate in the type of season that you have, right, that job one has always been, let's see what they have and let's hope that what we see and what we have is better as the season goes along and sets the stage for even better things going forward. You know, when you look at the group, you know, you're not going to have 100% success, but step by step during this winning process, I mean, you're really just down to a couple of guys you're focused on at this point because you've seen guys – I mean, I'll go another example of what you're talking about with just the improvements. It was really, for me, impressive to watch. You know, like Chris Roycroft was raw last year. Big, strong guy, brings the heat, dropping the arm angle and looking at the movement he's getting on some of those pitches. Not all of them can he command, but he's getting such a nasty little bit of movement and watching how much more, viable he looks as a middle reliever as a result of that adjustment. To me, that's a great example. And you're seeing a guy after guy. You're seeing what, you know, Kyle Leahy's done. Obviously,
Leahy's a great example. Great example.
Know, and Liberatore, just using the changeup and different pitcher. He's always had a lot of stuff he could use, a lot of weapons. But he's just using him better. And he's bouncing back from situations. He's mature. He believes in himself. He's established himself. He's a different guy now. He's the guy you were waiting for. So I think it's impressive that, I think to a large degree, as this thing is going forward, it's not 100% mandate being met, but you know they're checking boxes. This field staff.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to see if we could do that. All right, let's see if you and I, what you just touched on there about checking boxes. Let's see if you and I, how many different ways we can come up that they've won in this stretch. All right, I'll start first. They had the slugfest. I'll go there. All right. Slugfest Wednesday night, they fall behind 1-0, or I'm sorry, 5-1 in the, well, they go ahead 1-0, then they fall behind 5-1. Sonny Gray on the mound, their starter, as you said, that, and as Alec Burleson echoed, you know, that could have been the moment where like, all right, lost a tough game, gonna lose this mess of a game. It's rainy, it's nasty, the ball's soaring. Time to get to Kansas City and take advantage of that off day. Instead, they slug back. Lars Nootbaar, leadoff home run to get them going. Another five-run inning. Alec Burleson's home run to give them the lead. That lead doesn't last. It gets two pitches into the next inning, and it's gone. All right, that's fine. Rally back. Alec Burleson, two two-run single, then more. Then they add on late, five runs in the later innings, and they turn it into an absolute romp there at Citizens Bank Park. Okay, so that's a way they've won. Slugfest, three home runs, you know, season high 19 hits, season high 14 runs. They did that to split the doubleheader in Phillies. All right, what do you got?
Well, you do the counterbalance of the tough game that Sonny Gray had. You had a run of good starting pitching that with length and highlighted by Eric Fetty, of course, but you had multiple games of good starting pitching with length taking pressure off the bullpen. Mm-hmm. Again, that is something that going back to the spring, you wondered if you would be able to see that with this group, and you did.
Right. Yeah, the four consecutive seven-inning starts. As you mentioned, climaxed by a complete game shutout by Eric Fetty, the first of his career and the first for the Cardinals since a rather memorable game back in 2022 where Jordan Montgomery spun a shutout against the Cubs, and the only run of support he got was a home run by Albert Pujols. So, you know, as Albert Pujols nears being on the Hall of Fame ballot, it was that long ago that the Cardinals had a complete game shutout. Okay, I will dive inside baseball. How about Monday night's game where the bullpen won it? Jojo Romero had a small part in that, but he had a key part in setting it up. And then they knew where he was going to go if they could get the Phillies to flip their lineup. And they knew that they wanted to do it earlier to make that possible. The way they did it was going to Kyle Leahy. Kyle Leahy is a few years removed from being designated for assignment and kind of searching a little bit. Now he is a full month, maybe 2 months removed from the pitching coach saying, you know, he might have the best arm on the pitching staff. And the Cardinals are about 8 months removed from Andrew Kittredge going, hey, this kid ought to start, like if you look at his stuff. So Kyle Leahy's really kind of elbowed his way into a rather prominent high leverage spot. But not just that, it was multiple innings, and it was him against Bryce Harper and him against Kyle Schwarber. And he had, to refer back to our conversation just a little bit ago, he had an answer for that. You know, he was not going to be, he told us, a matchup right-hander. He wanted to find different ways to get lefties out, and he showed it. That was essential to that game, was the ability of him to go through multiple innings, to go against left-handers and to hold that game where it was, to then allow the Cardinals to basically lure the Phillies into unloading their bench earlier for a favorable matchup for Romero later. And it's not the first time that the Cardinals have done that in this stretch or relied on a reliever like that. Steven Matz has had multiple games. I know he took the loss there in the first game of the doubleheader, but he's had multiple games where his role in relief and his versatility and his length has won the game for the Cardinals.
Yeah, I'll go back to the offensive side and just look at the speed element, obviously highlighted by Victor Scott II. You know, a year ago, even when he got on base, he wasn't as aggressive as far as base stealing as he is this year. The whole team is using the whole emphasis on trying to aim for tells, and it hasn't always worked. But you're definitely sending a message to the teams you play that you're going to be aggressive, that you're going to look for tells, you're going to look to take bases. And then just, you got a guy who could score from first, right? On a ball that, on a gap single, he can, you know, and with some spacing out there, he can score from first, and that changes things. He'll steal a base, go to third on a ground ball to the right side and score on a sac fly, that type of run production that's kind of up and down. Not a lot of speed in the lineup, but guys playing aggressively on the bases. Maybe he's a tempo setter, but just an element he didn't have a year ago. And he didn't assert that element a year ago, but now he's a tempo setter with that. And some of us got a little misty-eyed watching guys score from first. You know, plays, right? We've seen that before. Been a while for us old enough to remember those days, but yeah.
Yeah. The Cardinals maybe even have another gear, Jeff, to play speed-wise, I think. I mean, like, obviously, you know, Victor Scott is a big part of it. Mason Wynn could steal more. We'll see more of that. You know, Nupar, I mean, he's not the burning sprinter, speedster, but what was sprinter? Is that even a word? The speedster that the other guys are, but he can run the base as well. I think the more Victor Scott gets on base, the more you're going to see that speed really take off. And it's coming along for the young man, and you can see how opponents are getting ready for it. And I know there's a question like, well, is he going to walk more? Well, the more he hits, the more he's going to walk. I mean, that's just that's the nature of it. The opponents are challenging him, but he starts hitting the ball with authority. He starts turning, those flares to left field that he gets singles on. He starts turning those into doubles with his ability to run. Teams are going to say, all right, well, we may not be too eager to go into the zone against him, and the walks will follow, and then the steals will follow. I mean, you're going to see there's more speed to his game that's coming. And I am really – you do talk about bringing more fans to the ballpark. I am really curious and eager to see if that brand of baseball, if a brand of baseball that includes more speed and athleticism is more entertaining, and does that bring fans to the ballpark?
Well, you would think it would. I mean, you're trying to because it's a different product, right? I mean, these games, it's great to have pace of play, and it's great to acknowledge that you're trying to keep things moving and have this an action game. But when you add that element of a team that's looking to do things with strategy, but with speed and athleticism as well, and you pay attention to the game. You're not just waiting to see how this at bat plays out. You're paying attention to see what are they doing here. What is the situation? And it's going to be a better product. And I got to think the fans, legacy fans, the old timers, they'll recognize what this looks like. I think younger fans just looking for something more active. They've got to identify with some of these players, the way they go about their game. Going back just to the energy of it. Like Wilson Contreras is not a speedster, but he exudes energy. Ivan Herrera is not a speedster, but man, he got his butt down the first baseline to beat out a hit, going full tilt not long after a knee injury. The team's playing hard. Besides the pace, the effort.
I'm going to say it again. The Cardinals need one of their players. It's a small thing, but it's a big thing at the ballpark. They need one of their players to choose a sing-along walk-up song. All week. I mean, the Phillies have a rocking, great energy and environment, and their ballpark is awesome. I mean, they're 40,000 on a Monday night, and it is packed. The kids were so loud in the afternoon game at Weather Day there Wednesday in the first part of the doubleheader. And, Bryson Stott, there he is coming up to the plate, leading off, and cue his walk-up music, and everybody sings in along with it. Washington's a few years removed from their greatness, but, it wasn't too long. Well, it was a long time ago. But they had Baby Shark. Gerardo Parra would walk up, and everybody would sing Baby Shark. You go to these places, and there is a playing along with the crowd, not just to the crowd, that has become a factor at these places that just enlivens a ballpark. I mean, the Phillies have a victory song. I am astonished that the Cardinals don't have these two simple things that would just invite fans to interact as a community and with the ball club to feel a part of the game day environment. And that is a walk-up song that people could sing along with. Just find one. There's tons of them. Just find one. And then, players got to be performing as well, but not all the time. And they're doing it. Like, I get the sense that the fans want to embrace this team and be a part of that vibe that you're describing. So do that. And then pick a victory song already. Like, have a song that plays that's St. Louis oriented, whatever it is, at the end of every game when they win, and fans can just stand there. It doesn't have to be "Go Cards Go." They don't have to write one to be like "Go Cubs Go," but in New York, they have one. They have one at so many ballparks. Boston has it. It's time. It's time to do that. Because you're right. Like, there is, if anything, like, if the Cardinals aren't going to get support from the front office this year with trades, the very least they can do is get support from promotions and ballpark experience to say, this is the team we got. Enjoy it. They're playing well. You know, it's a show. You know, let's do that. This is the group. No, the front office isn't going to make any trades. We're not going to add that ace pitcher at the trade deadline. You know, we're not going to increase the payroll, blah, blah, blah. You know, at least maybe then funnel some of that energy, some of that reward for good play into creating that atmosphere that brings the fans in. Man, like it'd be so easy to do. All right, now I'm on a rant. Sorry. It would be so easy to do, Jeff. Just embrace the underdog notion, right? Okay, this is the St. Louis team that no one expected much from, that the entire game is overlooking. They've pushed them aside. They're not thinking much about them. They're flyover country. They didn't make any major moves in the winter. Everything about it. Okay, this is your team. It's your secret. This is your underdog. This is your secret. And then also, go get the supporters from STL City. They're not exactly getting the best product there at their field. Like, bring them over just one night, two nights. Give them a section. Put them in right field. Say, hey, man, you know, just bring the drums, chant, change the atmosphere at the ballpark, and start to mirror the scrappiness and the feistiness and that vibe that you talk about of this team. It is very interesting that for the last few years, they've had a very stoic team and a very stoic ballpark. This is not a stoic team. This is a kinetic team. Time to have a kinetic ballpark.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, one thing I would look at right off the bat is, you know, how you've got guys who are very, you can promote guys. You have some guys with personality. You've got guys who can, in some cases, with some swagger, we talk about Mason Wynn. You can talk about Victor Scott. He definitely has a presence about him. Wilson Contreras is a huge personality. Alec Bertelson's a big personality. You know, Newtbar's been a popular figure because he's an easygoing, cheerful guy and fun. And you got other fun guys and odd guys. And I just look back, you know, I'll draw a comparison to the Blues again, but they did a good job of all year long building the personalities of their guys.
Yes.
Trying to, as people and as fun characters, you know, Pavel Buchnevich being an oddball, guys just, you know, Colton Preko's boring, not much you can do with him, but there's, you know, these other guys, they definitely tried that and just tried to get that, this team has personality, this Cardinal team has personality, it's there. You know, Victor could probably write some music, some contemporary music for the group, he does this. I'm not sure he wanted Alec, whether he could measure up to Victor, could do it, but he.
Oh, Biscuits.
As a DJ, yeah. He could, you know, maybe he could come up with something. You're right. I love the fact that you talked about this from day one with this, this year with the podcast, that they did not want to have that quiet team this year. Mm-hmm. They were not going to have the Paul Goldschmidt all business quiet persona. He's a great player, or one of the all timers and all that, but this team needs to have, you know, outward energy.
Yep.
You got a guy there, Contreras, who's not much more. You can't ask much more out of a guy for that point. He's channeling it for positive as well. He's channeling it. He understands his position on the team. He's taking that responsibility. And I just love it when all those dugout shots, the way these guys are interacting now, these are all good things. I think so. That's, again, I hope the fans do see that. I hope that the team can capitalize on that, because they've got guys that can capitalize on here.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a vibrancy that has manifested in wins. And it seems like, you know, you don't know where this, I mean, look, this team continues to play the way it is. They'll do well against teams that are their equals. They'll hang in there against teams that are their betters. And they will defeat teams that are less, that are inferior to them. And that is enough to contend in the National League Central, just to be clear. That's enough. They will need some help. They will need some pitching help. And there's no clarity that that'll happen. There's no sense that the Cardinals will be eager to add. We'll see if the play can force ownership to say, yeah, you know what? No, we're gonna buy in on this team. I actually think that that's where we're headed. Like that's the direction. That's kind of the next phase of this. You have the development start in the field and the play, and can they sustain it? That's fine. The next kind of two phases are, do the fans buy in, and do you start seeing them show up at the ballpark? Do you start seeing an energy around them on social media? Do you start seeing the ratings on the TV? Do the fans buy into this? And then the next step is, does ownership buy in? And say, okay, no, this is better than we expected, or even better than we planned. Now let's outfit it. And I think it's a coin flip, and this is going to be really something to watch, especially because of how dramatic it could be. I think it's a coin flip that happens, and that means that the alternative, Jeff, is that you have this vibrant, electric, buoyant, fun team to watch, sort of a neon light that no one expected to still have some juice in it, and all of a sudden ownership or the front office will come along and unplug it. And man, I think that could crater the clubhouse. I wonder how they factor in the development aspect of that. I mean, right. Because you know, like, you have so much positive momentum going for so many of these young players. Victor Scott is the headliner in that group, but also, you know, Matthew Liberatore and everything like that. Lars Nootbaar, you pull the plug and go trade Ryan Helsley or go trade Nolan Arenado, and that clubhouse is going to change. It's going to feel – there's going to be an element of heartbreak.
Well, and you look at the value you mentioned in the development of players individually. There's value in playing baseball in a good environment, learning and reinforcing good habits and reinforcing what a team is to players who are going to be your leaders going forward. There's value in them knowing what that looks like, what that feels like. And there's value in playing games that matter. Mm-hmm. And if you're in July and the games don't matter, and you're in August and the games don't matter, and you're in September and the games don't matter, guess what? You learn how to do, play games that don't matter. So I think go back to the Blues, but one element of why they wanted to continue to try to contend or at least compete while some of these guys were developing was so that they would learn the right way, learn how to play important games, you know, gain mm-hmm. from that experience. Because, yeah, you want to develop your skill, but your approach to the game, your habits, the way you handle yourself every day is so critical to all this. The mechanics of it, the personal performance, the work that you put in. Yeah, the physical side is critical, but, you know, if you're uninspired and the team's lagging and you're not paying attention to detail because what does it matter?
Yeah.
Yeah, and what does that do to your development? You know, trying to get guys over the hump, right?
What competitive and cultural whiplash that would be if they go from playing playoff-style games in May to playing out the string in August. Wow. I mean, I guess maybe that's the concern as we talk about like what brings fans. And I have wondered that if there's an apprehension to embrace a team that the front office has kind of advertised that it might pick apart, you know, like you don't want to fall in love with, a team that's not going to be there in August. Right. Like maybe they feel like, nah, we're not doing that. You know, we're once bitten on that stuff. I think it's a really fascinating spot. So that's kind of the order of operation. You got buy-in from the players right now, buy-in from the players for sure. They believe in themselves in a way that definitely the greater baseball did not. They believe in themselves in a way that clearly some of the fans do not. So got buy-in from the players, you got results in the standings, buy-in from the fans comes next. And then ultimately the question becomes buy-in from ownership. And I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I do love the fact that we don't know. You wish that they had an ounce of the drive that Ollie has, because you know, he knows what this team can do. He knows how important this is for him and these players and everybody. But that guy does not want to just show up and punch a time clock. He doesn't go about life that way. I would hope some of that energy from that field staff, which is very energetic, translates up to the lame duck president of baseball operations, who so far has been respectful of the team's success, hasn't done anything to undermine it, and up to the DeWitts, because there's potential to not only get fans back this year by making the games relevant and making the team relevant, but also to create a much better foundation for what you want to do going forward. And that's an investment, not only in getting fans back, but there's going to be an investment in the player development too. And I think teams, you look around baseball, man, you look around a lot of sports, the teams that are always rebuilding, well, because there wasn't really a true investment made in getting that team back, you know, to where it needed to be. Year after year, they just, you wonder why guys don't get better for certain teams. Well, you know, look at the environment, right? So you got to invest in that, and you hope they understand. None of the messaging has been very good since the end of last season, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, a campfire needs tending, you know? I mean, that's just it. Like, a spark can really start something, but it needs tending. And I say this hesitantly, but the Cardinals have a spark. Now, will they get the tending that they need to become something much bigger than expected this season? I'm going through my scorebook here, Jeff, and there's not one game, but there's moments in games that is another way the Cardinals have won, and that is defense. I got a bunch of stars in my scorebook. I mean, you think about the defense in center field, plus defense in right field this season. Nolan Arenado has had a couple moments where he's absolutely won games. Brendan Donovan subtly has had plays, turned that double play the other day that made it possible to get out of that trouble there and in Washington. And the ripple effects of that one moment was that Jojo Romero didn't pitch in that game. So that made him free and ready to go for two of the games in Philly when Philly had the more destructive left-handers looming that they wanted to have Jojo ready for. So the defense has contributed in great ways and Nolan Arenado said he can't think of a team playing better defense or that has a better defense than them. And that's not an over-exaggeration. They're playing very athletic, very keen, and very, very savvy defense.
Well, another thing I would look at, and even in a game where there's a lot of runs scored, there were various points in the game where the Cardinals needed more runs to keep the upper hand. And you're seeing some situational play, some situational hitting.
Right.
Guys getting congratulations for whether it's a ground ball on the right side to get the guy over to third or a fly ball to right to get the guy over or a sack fly or just, you know, scratching out an infield hit to keep a game going and an inning going rather. Yeah, you've seen some of that. I mean, it's an emphasis point going in, of course, with the, new hitting coach trying to get a mindset. What are we doing in these innings? You've seen a measure of that. You know, there's frustration. You know, there's a great chance for Donovan to advance runners in the game, but he didn't. But he's done that plenty this year. That he's done. He's had great at-bats in that situation. And a guy like Arenado clearly trying to go to the right side in a situation, knowing how he's being pitched, knowing what the situation was. So, yeah, you've seen some signs of that, and it's paid dividends.
Yeah, Brant Brown has really brought an emphasis to that. And you mentioned the enthusiasm of the staff. John Jay, Brant Brown, these guys were hired in part because of that, because of, Jay not too long ago was a player. Obviously, he's got a big personality and, can really kind of shake up a clubhouse, can shake up a dugout both with what he demands but also how much fun he has. He's been a big part for the outfield and some of the base running. And, you know, Brant Brown is just, he is a tireless fan of his hitters. Wasn't quite sure how his energy and his, approach was going to hit with a team that, like we talked about, has been pretty stoic, but it has. And it really has resonated with them. And he hits on those situational hittings quite a bit. He talks a lot about, that's what it takes to win in the tournament. And what he means in that is that situational hitting is what wins in October. So might as well get pretty good at it in May because it's going to help win there. The last way I have that they've won, and I'm sure there are other ones, but the last one I have is it's kind of one that we've mentioned. Certainly we've mentioned the individuals, but it's, the stars are stars. And I think, what Wilson Contreras has done over the last 30 days, come out of his funk and just absolutely raged at the plate. He's got the second highest on-base percentage in that span to a fella named Aaron Judge, who I hear is quite good at baseball. And, you know, he's got a 26 game on base streak. Wilson Contreras does, you know, he's just been that offensive engine that a lot of folks expected him. His teammates certainly expected him to be out of spring training in the lineup every day because he's playing first base. You know, he's the star. He and Nolan Arenado are the stars. And, you know, Nolan hasn't hit for the power that he wants. He's had some games with that, but he's providing, and he is the star on defense that's expected of him. And the Cardinals are winning games because their stars are being stars. And I think there in the night sky, we're also seeing the potential of new stars emerging, Jeff. Is that possible? Because you really can't look at this stretch or even this season for the Cardinals without saying what Nupar has done at leadoff. Matt Carpenter, you know, retired, made his announcement that he's retiring. Matt Carpenter and Charlie Blackman, two leadoff hitters who changed the profile of that position during their time, you know, so that what followed, you saw Schwarber and Mookie Betts and all these guys who are OPS monsters in that leadoff spot. I'm not equating what Nupar is doing in the leadoff spot to what Matt Carpenter did as one of the most productive leadoff hitters for 7 years there. But you don't have to strain to see that Nupar could do a lot of that. You know, he could be that double machine that Matt Carpenter was. He has the eye of Matt Carpenter. And so I think you're starting to see, like, the Cardinals need their stars to be stars to win games. But you're seeing players say, okay, well, I'm going to be one of those stars.
I'll give you one more, last one. And this is, we've talked about the field staff. We've talked about Ollie and as the individuals. But all right, I'll go back to the guy that's setting the tone here. You know, Ollie's situation being tough and set the tone early, right off the bat. This is what we want to do. And this team was in a tough place, man. This team couldn't win a road game to save itself. And there was a ton of frustration building up, I'm sure, with some of these road losses. Yeah, he was resolute. You dealt with him every day, man. He was resolute. We're just push. Given the amount of pressure he's under in his situation, being, you know, uncertain going beyond this year, giving you know, the fan and the negativity of the echo chamber was very bad with this franchise. He blocking all of that out. You see managers flipping out left and right over different things. Stayed the course, stayed with this group, stayed with his belief, kept pushing and kept expecting and kept praising and stayed with it. I think it's been impressive. I think this has been impressive. Now, how this ends up, I don't know. But this team was in a bad place there for a bit. And all the echo chamber was all right. Everybody was right, man. Yeah, this whole situation, lame duck president of baseball operations, is going to be a fire sale, blah, blah, blah. No, he took this job. He said, no, here's what we're going to do. Here's who we're going to be. And even when things looked bad, he just kept with it. Now, I don't know how much longer they can keep this pace up, but it's impressive. I just think the leadership from his spot and the whole group, obviously, he gets tremendous support from John Jay, Descalso, Brandt, you know, suddenly the fact that you got a pitching coach from the collegiate ranks, no longer an issue with some fans because, you know, Dusty's actually knows what he's doing and the team guys are making progress individually as well as a group.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. I mean, and there's strategy elements like what they did on Monday night. You know, a lot of teams will do that. A lot of managers will do that. And it takes execution of the players to pull it off. But I also know that there are other managers that won't think to do that, that won't, like, you know, get a team to unload its bench early with a choice to set up something later. They're not two steps ahead like that. And, you know, I've watched it happen. I've seen managers unable to do that. One of the managers who's really good at it, Derek Shelton, you know, is no longer a manager. But, you know, there's elements within the game too. And there's also like moments like you're talking about where it doesn't seem to be like the baseball strategy, but it's the development strategy. And to balance those two with some level of confidence is not the easiest thing for a manager of any team who knows that they're only a phone call away from not being a manager of a team.
Now, it's impressive. It's the maturity, the leadership, the confidence. If the players don't believe the manager has confidence in a vision and in a backbone in the face of what's coming at him, that you've seen what that looks like, Derek. You've seen teams where that's pretty evident, right?
I have indeed. All right, Jeff. So I guess if the Cardinals are going to show this much verve and break loose of the stoicism that has kind of defined them for years, I guess I got to drop my stoicism too. I got to be less. I got to bring more energy. I got to bring more energy. I'm trying to bring more energy to the podcast. I got to have more lively verbs.
There we go. We've been passionate here. It's like, that's good. No, this is fun. Let's see. I hope your podcast through the duration of the season have the same level of energy, man.
Yeah. I need to bring it
to August. And it's like, oh God. Tink Hentz is going to finally make his big league debut. He's overcome his 14th oblique injury, but the team's 14 games back or 19 games back.
Yeah, we'll have real problems when I go, hello, everybody. Welcome to the best monotone monologue in baseball.
Well, you can always get me in here to yell and scream.
Okay, good. Yeah, and then I'll just keep the even pulse. That'll be my role. I'll be the librarian who is just like even keel, you know, and not let on and not have any pulse whatsoever. No, look, the Cardinals are playing exciting baseball. Coverage needs to have some excitement too. We'll see what follows. I really don't know. This is such a fascinating topsy-turvy year. I've been thinking a lot about this. Like, all right, is this familiar now? All right, they're a game out in the NL Central. Do we just cover this like we've always covered it? Like, all right, what are you going to do to win the Central? What are you going to do to win a pennant? Or is there still this development edge and you feel like the floor could give out at any time and you have to cover it like, okay, no, they're building towards something, they're improving. I think a lot about that and I don't have a good answer. So maybe I'll just default to like, all right, it's in there. Win. You've shown you can win in a lot of different ways, right? Why aren't you winning?
Well, we'll all help you with that. You got all these people trying to help you with that. You know, Benjamin will help you with that. Lynn will help you with that.
Yeah.
Daniel will help you with that. So we got a lot of people. You. Those who are regulars know that you got a whole army of folks looking at this.
Absolutely. That is sports columnist Jeff Gordon, author of Tip Sheet and Our Instant Offense at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. You can find him and Lynn Worthy there at STLtoday.com talking baseball in their weekly video, Inside Pitch. You can find him regularly here at the best podcast in baseball. And you can find all of our constant Cardinals coverage at STLtoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. I am in Philadelphia about to pack and bolt for my plane, but first I will also work on the newsletter, Right Fielder, which you can subscribe to, comes from my keyboard straight to your inbox every Friday morning. The best podcast in baseball is available wherever you get your podcasts, Jeff, wherever you get your podcasts. If you get it on iTunes or Spotify, whichever, it is available there for you. It's brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I got some, I'm excited. I got a few guests lined up in the coming weeks. So I'm eager to get to them to have some real strong ball talk in the near future. I'm looking forward to that. And we'll see if I have another rant about the environment at Busch Stadium and how it needs to pick up. Cardinals face the Royals. Then they welcome in Jack Flaherty's Detroit Tigers. That'll be another test for them, for really one of the better teams coming into town right off the hop, and not obviously a team they only play once, and a team with a familiar face on it who is currently, the way the Tigers have their rotation set up, set to pitch in one of those games. So that'll be a festival evening there at Busch Stadium, Jeff.
I'm emotional, my Tigers, all these years, man.
Yeah.
I gave up on them right about the time that Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell were done with their run.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm a Jim Northrup, Norm Cash, Willie Horton, you know, Al Kaline guy, right?
All right. All right. No, that's good. All right. We'll see you out at the ballpark for those games, right?
Yeah. Put my little Tigers hat on. I'll be good.
Okay. All right. A little Tom Selleck look. That'd be good. That'd be good. All right. Well, I look forward to it. The best podcast in baseball brought to you by Closet by Design. It's a weekly feature here at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. For Jeff Gordon, sports columnist there at STLToday.com, I'm baseball writer Derek Gould, and we'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the ball games.
All right, well, go get a cheesesteak on your way out of town, right?
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. That's why you need a washable sofa that can keep up. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. Starting at just $699, it's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.